President-elect Trump says he won't rule out military or economic action for the Panama Canal and Greenland.
No, I can't assure you on either of those two, but I can say this. We need them for economic security.
The goal is to take control, but is it even possible?
This plan is totally unrealistic. It would not happen without major military operations.
Today is Tuesday, January 7th. And this is The Issue from VOA.
I'm Scott Walterman.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
We need them for economic security.
During a wide-ranging news conference that lasted more than an hour on Tuesday, President-elect Donald Trump said he would not rule out the use of military force to seize control of the Panama Canal and Greenland. On Greenland.
Can you elaborate again? You didn't rule out military coercion.
We need Greenland for national security purposes. I've been told that for a long time, long before I even ran. I mean, people have been talking about it for a long time. You have approximately 45,000 people there. People really don't even know if Denmark has any legal right to it. But if they do, they should give it up because we need it for national security. That's for the free world. I'm talking about protecting the free world.
On the Panama Canal.
Look, the Panama Canal is vital to our country. It's being operated by China. China. And we gave the Panama Canal to Panama. We didn't give it to China. And they've abused it. They've abused that gift. It should have never been made, by the way.
He also brought Canada into the conversation in terms of it becoming part of the United States.
Canada and the United States, that would really be something. You get rid of that artificially drawn line, and you take a look at what that looks like. And it would also be much better for national security. Don't forget, we basically protect Canada.
Trump also talked about wanting to impose tariffs on Canada, saying if Canada stopped shipping goods across the border because of those tariffs, it wouldn't hurt the United States.
We don't need anything they have. We don't need their dairy products. We have more than they have. We don't need anything. So why are we losing $200 billion a year and more to protect Canada?
In response to Trump's comments on Greenland, Greenlandic member of the Danish parliament, Aaja Chemnitz, rejected the idea of a United States takeover of the autonomous territory of Denmark.
It's not a question of whether should we be American or Danish citizens. It's a question of whether should we maybe collaborate a bit more with the U.S. We shouldn't be bought by anyone because Greenland is not for sale and Greenland will not be for sale. But we can have a closer collaboration on business development with the U.S.
Donald Trump's eldest son, Donald Jr., just visited Greenland's capital on a private visit. To that, Chemnitz said,
if you only look at it from a visit from an American tourist, I think it's great. But we all know that the timing and also the dad to Trump Jr. is, of course, saying that he would like to own and control Greenland. And we don't like that. We find it quite disrespectful in Greenland.
There was a lot going on in the news conference. It lasted more than an hour, as you mentioned at the top of the report. But we focused in on these three things, Lori, because, well, to me, they just jumped out. It's a major foreign policy shift for the United States.
Right. And, you know, of course, some of our allies, like Canada, you know, we've had a wonderful, close relationship with them. They're right on our border. You know, you have to wonder how the reaction is going to be. Overall, there is a lot to unpack here, Scott, from just this little sampling of the president-elect's news conference, but could have big implications. Joining us now is Philip Brenner, Professor Emeritus of International Relations and History at American University.
Thank you so very much for being able to join us on this.
My pleasure.
So President-elect Trump today in a news conference that lasted more than an hour talked specifically about three things that we want to talk to you about: Greenland, the Panama Canal, and Canada. In the case of Greenland and Panama Canal, which he wants to take control back of the Panama Canal, and he wants control of Greenland, he has offered to buy it, but today did not rule out using the military to gain control of both of these territories. I would ask how unusual that is, but it seems very unusual.
President Trump's proposals are very unusual, yes.
So Greenland is autonomous, right?
It's actually a sovereign territory that's under the – it's not a separate country. It's part of Denmark. It's part of Denmark. It has autonomy, but it's not a member of the United Nations.
So beyond unusual, how realistic would something like that be, and why is he so determined to take Greenland, to buy Greenland, and is this even something realistic?
Those are very different questions. So let's start. This is totally unreal. This plan is totally unrealistic. It would not happen without major military operations, because Denmark is unwilling to either consider giving Greenland to the United States or to sell Greenland to the United States. The people of Greenland have made it very clear they do not want to become part of the United States. So this would take a major aggressive action. And it's not even clear the United States has the capability of undertaking such a major aggressive action. So this is totally unrealistic. Why the president would want to do this, I think it's has much to do with the minerals that Greenland possesses and the concern that the United States doesn't have a strategic stockpile of those minerals. And so it's a way of raising that issue. How do we get more of those minerals? The claim is that China is aggressively pursuing those minerals around the world and we're falling behind. There's a minerals gap, as there might have been a missile gap at one time. And so the president-elect is trying to make the point that the United States has to do something about that minerals gap.
He's also mentioned that Russia, it's a security issue in terms of that part of the world, navigation and such, and Russia is also a major player there.
Well, now that the Arctic Sea is opening up to navigation, Greenland becomes more of a strategic location. Yes, but we have plenty of strategic capabilities in that area. We don't need Greenland. And in fact, Greenland is part of our strategic capability now. We don't need to possess it in order to have it as a strategic location.
And what about the Panama Canal? Him talking about we need that back in our control and the reality of that.
Panama Canal is a very different kind of issue than Greenland for several reasons. One is the symbolism of the Panama Canal. For the Western Hemisphere countries, the Panama Canal long served as a symbol of U.S. imperialism, because the history of the Panama Canal is that the United States did build the canal, but it did so after it encouraged the Panamanians to separate from Colombia in a rebellion in 1903, and then having Panama write a treaty with the United States that was very favorable to the United States. The Panama Canal split the country right down the middle, and it was U.S. territory right in the middle of this country. And so it was a kind of imposition that spoke of big stick imperialism of the early 1900s. And for Latin America, it was a sore thumb. President Carter understood that, and he used a lot of political capital to negotiate a Panama Canal treaty that ultimately turned the Panama Canal over to full sovereignty for the Panamanians in 1999. The Panamanians are very proud of that canal, and in fact, they've now invested a lot of money in widening the canal so that it can take super cargo ships. So they would be very reluctant to give up this canal, although there are serious problems about the canal. There are droughts. The canal is partly human constructed, but part of it goes through a lake that has lost water, and so there are serious problems for the Panama Canal acting as a waterway even. But that aside, the Panama Canal is something that the Panamanians hold very dear and feel that they have now made even better by investing billions of dollars to widen it. Latin Americans of all stripes would feel the same way. The president's concern here is directly about the Chinese. There are some Chinese contractors involved in running the canal, but they're not the only ones. And the claim is that anything that Chinese touch that put a finger on is a security threat to the United States, which absolutely has no bearing. I mean, if China tried to stop U.S. ships from going through the Panama Canal, that would be an act of war, and China doesn't want to engage in silly acts of war for what purpose? I mean, if we're going to have a war with China, it's not the Panama Canal is not going to be the source of that war. And they don't want a war with the United States over something like that. This is a way of simply asserting, I guess, America first policy without any substance to it at all.
And on Canada, it becomes a little bit more unclear, but he made some claims that the United States is underwriting Canadian security to the tune of $200 billion a year because Canada depends on the U.S. military to protect it. And that had to stop, he said. And again, he's talking in terms of Canada becoming a state of the United States, which yes. is unclear to me how that would happen.
I think these are the musings of someone who is not fully understanding that that's not a way you treat your allies, probably our closest ally, our second largest trading partner, and an ally that for a long time we never even had to worry about our border with. His attacks on Prime Minister Trudeau ultimately led to Trudeau's resignation yesterday. So I think that it's creating very bad will with Canadian people, and for no good reason. I mean, we get nothing out of that. It may be true that Canada spends less per capita on military, but people have to remember it's a small country. It's only 40 million people. It's one ninth the size of the United States, and it's unlikely to spend more money. It has domestic problems that it can't afford to pay for as it is. And it's a very large country. It's larger than the United States physically. So the idea that it's certainly not going to become the 51st state, this may be a way of trying to get them to spend a little more on their defense capability. But the President-elect Trump, when he was president, was successful in getting NATO members to spend a little more of their budget on military issues. And this may be that effort to say that he forced Canada to do that. But that would be the best he could get out of this. And the worst is he'd be creating an antagonistic country right next to us.
So do you think that this is something that realistically Canada as a whole should be concerned about, or is it just more bluster?
Well, this is certainly bluster. I think the United States has to be more concerned than Canada does, because you don't want to antagonize a country that is normally so friendly to the United States. I mean, on top of the issue of this calling Canada a 51st state, the president-elect is threatening to impose tariffs that would damage Canadian economies. Not, it would also hurt the U.S. economy. As I say, Canada is our second largest trading partner. So would it also hurt the U.S. economy? There are industries that are intimately tied with Canada for real-time production that would be very much damaged. So the issue of military spending, 50 per state, is almost the least of the problems we have with Canada. The tariff is a much bigger issue. And I think the president-elect has to be careful about antagonizing Canada in that regard.
So as a strategy in the new world, this quid pro quo negotiating style, this transactional negotiating style, is there a place for it? I mean, I think that's what's happening.
I think that's a good assessment. The president historically has been, President Trump has historically been a transactional actor. He likes to engage in everything as if it's a deal, without understanding that in politics, there, sometimes things aren't necessarily a quid pro quo, that you build up goodwill as well as building up immediate gains and losses in any particular transaction. And so diplomacy requires a long game as opposed to a short game. And here he seems to be playing a short game. And in diplomacy, that often doesn't work.
All right. Really interesting.
So
yeah. Thank you for your time and perspective.
That was Philip Brenner, Professor Emeritus of International Relations and History at American University.
Yeah. I think, you know, for what it's worth, we're looking at a negotiating tactic. It's his style. It's the, I'm going to throw everything on the table. We're going to get together. We're going to talk it out. We're going to come to a conclusion.
But it's sort of a strong arm kind of tactic. It's sort of a, you know, do what, you know, to get the results that you want, not just say, hey, you know.
Well, there's no doubt it is an aggressive negotiating style.
It's definitely different.
As Professor Brenner pointed out, it is not diplomacy. It is a business negotiation.
Right. And, you know, as we know, Donald Trump is looks at everything through the eyes of a business
negotiation.
Deal.
Yeah. You've been listening to The Issue from the Voice of America.
On behalf of all of us here at VOA in Washington and around the world, thanks so much for joining us.
You can follow The Issue on X, Blue Sky, and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And you can get news anytime you want it, on demand, at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
We'll talk to you soon.